Welcome to the Interpreter Foundation podcast. Chris Fredrickson, Bruce Webster, and Martin Tanner here. This is our discussion topic, and it is finding answers to critics. So this is a discussion podcast about finding answers to critics of the church. Before we dive right into that, we'll tell you that the mission of the Interpreter Foundation is to support the church through scholarship. We make the latest and best scholarship available to you. We invite you to see all that the Interpreter Foundation has to offer. Please go to interpreterfoundation.org to do so. Please tell your friends about us and subscribe on your favorite podcast app. Please know that because the Interpreter Foundation is not owned or controlled by the church, anything that we happen to say today is solely our own responsibility. One other note, and that is that if you are looking for a fabulous trip this next summer in 2026, if you are looking for a marvelous family experience, or a one-of-a-kind Christmas gift, or birthday gift, or some other gift, join the Interpreter Foundation for a meticulously crafted tour of Great Britain led by Dan Peterson and Chris Fredrickson. Explore storied LDS church history sites. Learn about the missionaries who sacrificed much to preach the gospel in the UK, and also about those who converted to the church at that time. Explore renowned cathedrals, palaces, quaint villages, spectacular locales, and participate in local cultural events. You'll conclude with four memorable days in London, which is, of course, one of the world's greatest cities. Space is limited. So if you'd like more information, or if you want to book your reservations, go to Bountiful Travel's website, which is easy, bountifultravel.com, bountifultravel.com, or simply give them a call to get more information at 801-453-9444, 801-453-9444. And now, on to our discussion topic, which is finding answers to critics. Bruce and Chris, this is something that is so timely because ever since that horrible attack on the Michigan Chapel and ever since Charlie Kirk's assassination and ever since forever and ever in the last 150 years, you've had critics of the church who are constantly barraging church members and others with false information about the church. One of the most fascinating results of some of this is that in one of the earliest articles that he ever published, Matt Roper found a direct correlation between the amount of publications, the actual number of anti-Latter-day Saint publications, and the increase in converts to the church. So the more anti-Mormon literature, the more converts. So I guess that was one of the first studies that showed that any publicity is good publicity. I don't know what you want to draw from that. But I in my heart of hearts, I like to think that rational people see some of the criticisms and say to themselves, that can't possibly be right, or they can't really be that bad, or they simply, for whatever other reason, look into some of the literature and find out it's just nonsense. So let's sort of
you know what
off
it reminds
from
me,
that point, Chris.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Well, no, speaking of our tour to London, it reminds me of I think it's Heber C. Kimball on that first mission in 1837 or 18, but he's back again in 39. But when he's there and he's preaching and they send the police to arrest them, maybe it's Welford Woodruff, And the two officers that are sent, they listen and they like what they're hearing and they end up wanting to be baptized. So they obviously don't arrest them. The next night they send more individuals. More individuals are intrigued by what is said. They stop sending individuals to arrest them because it wasn't quite working out the way that they had hoped.
Was working out how
Because
Matt Roper described.
exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah. And I think the Book of Mormon, the musical, has done what I've never seen it. I have no interest in seeing it. It sounds totally unpalatable to me and just, but I know a lot of people just like those times they posted in those, those billboards they got in Times Square, which is, you've seen the musical, now read the book. I think it's helped a lot of converts too. Yeah.
Let me quote a story told by a general authority who said, in a recent conversation with a choice college girl, I listened to two statements that may reflect the feelings of many of her peers who have similar problems and for similar reasons, and who, like her, seem content to understand where the solutions are without doing anything to bring them about. She called herself a theological illiterate. Shortly thereafter, noting that she's never read through any of the so-called standard works, nor any basic exposition of gospel principles. She had never read any version of church history, lengthy or abbreviated. This is Marion D. Hanks in 1969. This is an article he published called Theological Illiterates in the Improvement Era, in the youth section, the Era of Youth section. And it remains an issue, and it's multiplied nowadays because, well, actually, I see a bifurcation. I'm actually seeing a lot more young members of the church in their late teens and 20 somethings who are becoming gospel scholars and defenders of the faith. I think they have been, as per Chris's comments, I think they've been turned as they've been touched by the preaching of the gospel, and have found a lot of the anti-Mormon stuff so ridiculous that they've said this can't be right, and they've gone with that. But on the other hand, I run across those who really don't, even within a church, have not taken the time to read the standard works. To read, as he puts it, basic expositions of gospel principles, who have not read any versions of church history, even though we live in a golden age. The Gospel Library app on your phone is a massive, massive gospel library. I would have killed to have had something as extensive as that, when I was a teenager, as opposed to working for $1.25 an hour and saving up my money to figure out the next book I was going to buy from the 70s group leader in our ward who would sell church books as a missionary fundraising issue. So I had to build up my library book by book through long works. Now you've got all this top-notch information. I mean, some of the best church scholarship, period, available on your phone or iPad. And there are so many members who just don't take advantage of that, who don't read it, who say, well, yeah, I saw a YouTube video by so and so who said we believe this, and therefore, I'm leaving the church, or I'm taking my garments off, or the temple is just Freemasonry, some of the usual old tropes, and so on and so forth. So we have tremendous resources out there. We have these nearly 700 articles on the Interpreter Foundation website. These are outstanding peer-reviewed articles. This is some of the best church scholarship that's been produced over the last 15 years. And too many people don't bother to read anything.
Yeah. Another great place to go if you want to find answers to specific questions is fairlatterdaysaint.org. That has over 30,000 answers to questions posed by critics. It was an outgrowth of a project called the Criticisms Project that was undertaken initially by BYU law school professor Jack Welch. And in there, he had said, we're going to answer every single question every critic has ever posed, answer every criticism every critic has ever posed. And we're going to do it in a short paragraph or two for every one of them. And it eventually became so big it couldn't be published. It would have been too big in a book. But then, of course, God provided the internet, I'm sure, just for that very purpose. Haha, I'm sure there were other good purposes too. But it
To
was.
find good, well, what about to find good restaurants?
That's right. There are many good purposes for the internet. But the
And
timing
maps.
was wonderful. And you can now get onto fairlatterdaysaint.org and just make a query at the top about anything. You could type in Joseph Smith polygamy. You could type in Spalding manuscript. You could type anything you want to, and you can get the answer to it sometimes from several short little articles, not just one. It's amazing thing you might want to look at. Other comments?
I want I was mentioning before we did this podcast, but I was mentioning that I had a friend at church that came up to me, just a delightful young woman, and she's in the middle of raising a family. She'd been sent a long and lengthy and laborious article titled Joseph Smith Was Right. Sounds great, doesn't it, for a faithful member of the church. She started going through it, and the article claimed that Joseph Smith was right when he said that he never practiced polygamy and that, this was not something that came from Joseph Smith. It's fascinating. We talk a lot about the word transparency, and the church, by opening up their archives, Joseph Smith papers, thank you, Larry Smith, Larry H. Miller, and others, but for making those available to us and being transparent. We're transparent. Nobody has written more faithfully and horrifically about the Mountain Meadow Massacre. We've got three really good publications, at least, on that. And we don't make any pretensions or any excuses for what happened. It was horrific, and we acknowledge that. But what you find is you find so many people out there that are using nefarious means, subterfuge, kind of deceiving you in, sucking you in order to confuse you. When I started reading this paper, she asked me if I'd look at it. Just give her some feedback. But when I started reading it, the first thing I thought is, as a university professor, if a student put this paper on my desk, I'd flunk them. Because the first thing that I saw was here were all kinds of quotes from Joseph Smith and other church leaders, sometimes really lengthy ones, put in quotation marks with not one citation or reference, so that the reader couldn't follow up and see if perhaps, and I'm saying, I'm using that word, I'm emphasizing it, if perhaps it had been taken out of context to serve that person's purposes. Dishonest scholarship. You see that a lot among these anti-Mormon individuals. And like I said, just the fact of alone that they are doing this, it's not a very Christ-like behavior. This is something Jesus Christ would never. He was confrontational with the Pharisees and Sadducees. There's no doubt about that, but not in the way that these people, act. And then to your point about what's available to people today, I can remember, peeling carrots, potatoes, making soup, making dinner, driving kids in the car. Oh my goodness, my gospel knowledge would be so greatly expanded by now if I had access to being able to hear those things. You can literally just set up your phone, or you can, bring it up on your TV if you, know how to do all that through some of these, like Spotify and other sites, and you can hear gospel scholars, and you can hear the scriptures, and you can hear saints. I'm listening to saints over again, and it's just while I'm cleaning the house, while I'm doing the wash, while I'm folding the clothes. What's available to us these days, and the fact that, and it, yeah, it does take some discipline to sometimes, all right, but I always find that once I get started, it's like, oh my goodness, this is so fascinating. And so helpful and so instructive. And here's why it's so instructive. And I've used this over and over again, and so I thought I would actually pull it up and read it so you can see what happens when you do not have a good doctrinal foundation in your life. So here is Alma 30, and here is one of our favorite Antichrist, Korihor. And he, of course, is ridiculing members of the church, and he's telling them that your beliefs as a member of the church, this is verse 16, are the effect of a frenzied mind. And this derangement of your minds comes because of the traditions of your fathers, which lead you away into a belief of things which are not so. So, anyone who is foolish enough to believe the things that the church teaches is deranged. They've lost their mind, and you're not capable of clear thinking. All right, so that's the premise he picks up here. And then I'm going to jump ahead here to verse 25. And I used to always ask my students when I was teaching Book of Mormon, I would always ask them, what's wrong with this verse, verse 25? And this is Korihor talking to the Nephites. Ye say that this people is a guilty and a fallen people because of the transgression of a parent. Behold, I say that a child is not guilty because of its parent. Okay, what's wrong with that scripture? He's claiming that members of the church believe in the doctrine of original sin. Do we believe in the doctrine of original sin? No, that doctrine actually is repugnant to our Father in heaven. The notion or idea that children come into this life innocent, that's the doctrine that we believe, that children come into this life innocent. But now here's the consequences. And thus Korihor did, this is verse 18, and thus Korihor did preach unto them, leading away the hearts of them, of many, causing them to lift up their heads in their wickedness, yea, leading away many women and also men to commit whoredoms, telling them that when a man was dead, blah, blah, blah. But what he's saying here is that they didn't know just the basic doctrines of the gospel of Jesus Christ, so they were so easily deceived. And you're being told that you believe a doctrine that the church finds abhorrent. But it's, oh my goodness, we believe that. For instance, this is consistent in the day and age in which we live. You hate gays. You hate homosexuals. Nothing could be farther from the truth, right? And yet, so many young people hear that and they turn away. That's all they need to hear. That's a hot button topic. And once that button is pushed, if they're not willing to do the research, if they're not going to dig into the doctrine, if they're not going to pay attention, and like both of you have mentioned, both you, Martin and Bruce, go on FAIR. Go to Interpreter Foundation. Look these things up. You're going to find great articles and information, some of it really succinct and very simple to help you understand what our doctrines are so that you're not going to be deceived by these people. And young people today, you touched on this as well. There's a maturity level in these young people today that I don't remember from my day. I can remember. I was pretty carefree as a California, beach girl and just having a fun time. And yeah, it's true. And our beliefs are pretty consistent with the world's Christian beliefs. And so, we all believed that marriage between a man and a woman, we all believed that immorality was wrong. Doesn't mean there wasn't plenty of immorality, but, we had shared values. We don't anymore. And, but these young people today, there's a maturity in them. They want to know. They're seeking to know. And one of the things that I think is truly benefiting them, and again, this is a huge shift in what we see in the church, is our temples. I work in the temple, are populated by young people who are coming of their own accord. If you want enlightenment, if you want inspiration, and they're coming at 5 in the morning, I have this cutest little kid in my ward. The family are incredible athletes. He's off to BYU. He's already signed with BYU. He's going on his mission first, but he signed with BYU. He t spoke in church. I know the family well, and I adore them. And he was saying that with his busy schedule, and believe me, he's got a busy schedule, school, church activities and callings, and then his sports and athletics. He decided, this is truncating, but he decided that every single once a week on a certain morning, 5 a.m., he's up and he's off to the temple. I wasn't going to the temple when I was in high school like that. Well, I was supposed to say 8 hours away. But these kids are going on their own, and that I think empowers them and enlightens them. And so when they hear things like this, they're intrigued. They're studying the gospel way better than I did when I was their age. So there's wonderful things that we're seeing among some of these young people today. But we are also seeing the ways that they can be so easily deceived. And I also think parenting these days, that four is the new six, in the sense that so many of our cultural and shared values now, that they are deviating further and further from the gospel of Jesus Christ, and parents need to be hyper aware of what's going on in their children's lives, and they need to be very attentive to teaching their children the principles of the gospel and reading with their children from the scriptures. When your kids come to you with a question, turn immediately to the scriptures and let's see what the gospel teaches us about this. Now, you know what you're doing for that children? You're establishing the scriptures as a voice of authority. You're not saying it, oh, this is authoritative, this is a voice of authority here, but you are teaching your child that if you want authoritative answers to doctrinal questions or to any of the questions, many of the questions we deal with in this life, the repository, the source that you should go to is the scriptures. And then, of course, follow that up with prayer, follow that up with service, follow that up with with temple worship. And I'm seeing all these, 40-ish parents these days, and honestly, I am truly amazed at their commitment to their families, so many of them, and the due diligence that they are putting in teaching these kids so that they are prepared when they go out and when they are, when they're assaulted by all of these critics, when they're challenged in their thinking, that many of them are prepared for those kinds of things because Satan is no fool. We need to understand the kind of adversary Satan is. He is as wily opponent as we will ever encounter in our entire lives, and he is relentless. And we need to understand more about this adversary and how he works and how he rolls. And there, of course, we've got that lovely tree of life dream to help us understand that, and the mocking and the, persecution that comes. And I think there will be some challenging times ahead for young people and for all people in this world. But as Elder Ballard, keep your feet in the boat. Keep your feet in the boat. Find answers to those critics in legitimate, reliable sources, and you can't go wrong. And then follow up with a prayer and get a conviction yourself. And I promise you, it may take a long time. Spencer W. Kimball prayed for years to understand better the doctrine of priesthood for blacks. And it didn't come for a long period of time, for years and years. But he persistently stayed in the boat. He did his callings. He was outstanding, as a church leader. And the answers came, and the answers will come to us too. And the blessings that will come to us. I knelt down the other night to say my prayers, and I thought, where would I be? And where am I now because of the gospel of Jesus Christ? That's a great question to ask yourself. What look at the privileges, and I mean, for me, you start in primary, you learn how to give talks, you learn how to get up in public, you get leadership assignments, you get teaching assignments, you get opportunities to serve, you get organizational skills. This is outside of the gospel of Jesus Christ. You get those spiritual witnesses, and that spiritual, I mean, I can't, at my old age, believe me, I am just more and more grateful for the gospel of Jesus Christ than I can even possibly articulate. And everybody's had questions over their lifetime. Everybody's had stuff with which, they disagreed with some things. But stay in there. Make sure you go to legitimate sources when you hear those critics, and don't just swallow whole the things that anti-Mormons sell you. They're good at what they do, but most of it is very disingenuous and untrue.
That is right. Thank you, Bruce. Anything else?
Only things we've said before, which is the it's hard at times with a lot of criticism of the church to tell how much is deliberate deception and how much is intellectual laziness, because they almost never there is such a vast library of good solid scholarship and literature about various aspects of the church, and you see the same, basically the same, 50 or so arguments recycled, none of which actually addressed anything that says, in essence, well, actually, you're wrong, or here's a context, or yes, but. or this is why that's not really an issue. And we're back to the classic phrase, a lie in wait to deceive, which Dan used in one of his first apologetic works, and still pretty much describes what most critics of the church, I am not willing to grant the vast majority of them any good faith. They are doing it deliberately. They're doing it deliberately to lead people away from Christ. And I'm glad I'm not going to be in their shoes when they have to stand before him to explain what they did. Because at the
Sure.
very least, he'll say, your scholarship was so sloppy. Didn't you read all these different books? That's a question I wouldn't like to have to answer to Jesus. if you try to claim sincerity, it's like, okay, if you were sincere, tell me about the actual research you did.
And you know what,
Absolutely true.
honestly, I do think some of them are very sincere. They very sincerely believe what they teach, but we can't confuse sincerity with truth. You can
Or
be sincerely wrong. You can,
competency.
yeah, but you
Some
can be
of them are very
sincerely
sincere but very
wrong.
incompetent.
Uh-huh.
Well,
And
I'll give you
you
an
can be a good
example.
person, and you can think the church is untrue, and you can challenge our doctrines and stuff, but you can be sincere in that. You can be committed to that, but you can be wrong in that.
Right.
And so, yeah, do your due diligence. They
And
should,
you have
like
to
you
do
said,
it
Bruce, they
well.
should.
Yeah, and you have to do your due diligence well, and you have to dig deep. I'll give you a 1 minute example. In 1832, Joseph, March of 1832, Joseph Smith was hauled out of the Johnson farmhouse, and he was tarred and feathered. I read an article and saw a couple of anti-Mormon podcasts that talked about Joseph Smith having this happen to him because he, shall we say, had assaulted young girls. And there were five different sources for this thought, supposedly from contemporaneous sources that said this was the real reason. And so several people had read this and had heard these sources from these podcasts and said, oh my gosh, maybe it really is true. Maybe Joseph Smith. And I dug deep into, and all of these sources, all five of them were quoting one source. And that one source was a secondhand statement from somebody who could not possibly have actually been a witness to these events, even though they were purported to. Because when I looked up how old this person was, they were 4 years old when Joseph Smith was hauled out of the Johnson farmhouse. So you got five sources that look authentic taking a position for somebody who never, ever could possibly have
Have
made
known.
the negative statement that was attributed to him. And that's the kind of stuff you get in anti-Mormon literature all the time. I saw a publication by Gerald and Sandra Tanner, who I w which I won't mention by name, but over and over again, if you dig into the quotes, there was Joseph Smith said, ellipses, such and such and such, and you dig up the underlying quote and it said he did not say, and they removed the word not, and it's stuff like that. You just think you people are
See,
so
and
bad.
that's why I'm saying red flag immediately when there's no citation at the end so that you can't go and search out the quote yourself.
That is absolutely right. Anyway, thank you all for listening. Chris Fredrickson, Bruce Webster, Martin Tanner, thanking you for listening to the Interpreter Podcast. Signing off, and hope you join us again next time.